I'm Jonathan Mitchell. I'm the producer of The Truth, and I'm going to talk a little bit about our show today and how we make pieces and how our process for making stories has evolved over the course of our life as a podcast. We make movies for your ears. So what we mean by that is we make dramatic fiction that's meant to be heard. There's no pictures. It's the idea, the reason we call it movies for your ears is because we try to take a more cinematic approach to the way we tell stories, and meaning that our storytelling process and our story development process is driven by editing and looking for ways of using the recording studio to develop stories and apply the strengths of the recording studio in combination with improv to the writing process. So I'm going to talk to you a little bit more about how we do that. What is The Truth? We make radio fiction. We use an unconventional production model. So we like to experiment around with lots of different ways of making stories. We're highly collaborative. We like to use lots and lots of ideas and lots of input from all kinds of contributors to generate a single story. We like to record on location, like a film. There's a lot of advantages to this. I'll get into this a little bit later. But the idea is we want to really find a really visceral, immediate way of doing drama on the radio and get out of the kind of the mold of people talking to microphones in a studio and really take it out into the real world and have actors reacting to real world stimulus, you know, and there's a lot of improv involved. And so we find that being in a real world environment can really inform the actor's choices and make for a more interesting and compelling narrative. And then we work with improvisers. So the actors are also writers in our production model. It's really important to us that the actors are invested in the writing of the stories and are from at every stage. And I'll get into this a little bit more later too. So just an overview. This is the main players, me and Ed. Ed helped me really start the show by connecting me with lots of performers in New York. We've worked on several stories together. This is the rest of our team. Carrie and Peter are sort of our production editorial side of things. Carrie helps me with getting distribution and funding. Peter helps. He's our connection with APM, American Public Media. They give us in-kind editorial support. And then these are some of our performers. We meet once a week at the Magnet Training Center in New York. And we talk about story ideas. Someone will bring in an outline. We'll bounce it around. Everyone contributes ideas. And the stories are generally developed through improvisation. What we're interested in doing is exploring how improvisation can be used in the recording studio in combination with the recording studio to create audio fiction. So the idea is, this is an idea I've had for a while, is that the improvisation has certain strengths and recording studios have certain strengths and they kind of complement each other. And we're trying to find a way to play off of, leverage those two elements so that they complement each other. So, you know, improvisation is really great for generating lots of ideas, getting a really naturalistic performance, getting it so the actors are listening to what's going on and interacting with one another. But it's not so great at creating story. And it's also tends to feel really rambly. The recording studio, on the other hand, is really good at editing things and messing around with the time domain and recontextualizing things. And so these two elements together are sort of like when I was a kid and I was learning how to play chess, I learned that the two rooks in combination with one another are really powerful. You know, there's like different combinations of pieces that have like more power because they're together. And that's just the way I kind of think of the recording studio improvisation. Is that these are two like peanut butter and chocolate. They're two great things that are even stronger together. So the first piece that I tried to apply this process to was a piece called Eat Cake. And the idea was I had an opportunity to a fiction piece for a show called Week in America. This was in 2008, like November of 2008, and I knew I wanted to do fiction, and I had been doing pieces for Week in America for a while. I had a lot of good connections there, and I said I really wanted to do a fiction show. And I had just gotten done working at Radiolab, and I had, I really wanted to start my own project. I really wanted to do something that reflected my own sensibilities as a producer, and this is what I always saw as being like my goal was to have a radio drama show, something that was really modern. So I really wanted to get a start at that. I saw this as my opportunity. So I pitched this piece, this piece where I would, I was really interested in working with improvisers, and I was taking a lot of classes at Upright Citizens Brigade Theater in New York. And I would go to a lot of performances and sort of take note of who the interesting performers were and people I thought would work really well on the radio, who had really great voices or really great personalities, kind of played, people I felt would fit in public radio. And so I got a bunch of these people together and brought them into the studio. And the idea was we would record for 3 hours, and I would have them do lots of different story ideas, and then take that tape and edit it into a story. Because oftentimes I would be at these improv performances, and you'd be watching them, and you'd say, if just edited that part out, this would be such a great interaction. That would work so well. You kind of can hear how editing can really improve it. And so I decided to give it a try, and we recorded for 3 hours, and nothing was coming of it. We went for another hour. We recorded a total of 4 hours that day, and nothing. Like I was just like, what was I thinking? This is a terrible idea. It's never going to work. Now I'm going to have to go back to the show and say it didn't work. And then I went home and I listened to the tape, and there was one idea in one of the things that they improvised about what they had. Let me back up a little bit. The idea for this, the pitch, was that we'd do a story that was about being alone on Valentine's Day. And so all the stuff they were improvising that day was about being alone on Valentine's Day. And in one of the stories, they had this idea of an anti-Valentine's Day tradition. And I kind of liked that idea. I thought there was something to that. And so I was talking with my editor, Hillary Frank, about this. And I said, nothing came out of this session, but I think there's something to this idea. We have another session scheduled for next week. Maybe we can do something with that. She said, well, how about, because she had a little bit more experience with writing fiction, and she understood that when you have two people with competing needs, with conflicting needs, it creates drama. So she thought, well, what if you had another person in the piece who had a conflicting tradition, and a tradition that got in the way of the other person's tradition? And so we sort of started thinking about what those would be. And I said, one of them calls people on Valentine's Day. That would give him a reason to kind of insert himself into her life. And so I took that to the actors the next week, and we started improvising around it. And what I really learned out of that process was improvisation is really different than storytelling. Improvisation is actually kind of ideal for comedy, because comedy is not as reliant on story. What a story is it's like a person has some kind of problem, some kind of obstacle, and the story is about how they overcome the obstacle to reach that goal. And I think what you really want to know before, when you start a story, is what the premise is, how it starts and how it ends, what the obstacle is. And so I came to the conclusion that really the best way to work with improvisers was to make an outline and take that and so apply improvisation to an outline. So the next story I did, I'm going to play a little bit of this. I did a piece called Tape Delay for a show called This American Life, And this piece took a long time to do. And I'll get into that in a second. It's about a guy who records his own phone call with a failed first date, and then uses that tape to retreat into his fantasy relationship with her. I'm just going to play. I'll get to that in a second. So it was on This American Life. This is how a lot of people got to know our podcast. It was the number one podcast in April because it was on This American Life. This is our stats. This is what it did. That's actually my wife's arm. I'm just kidding. okay, so So what we were exploring with tape delay was we were experimenting around with how improvisation can be shaped in editing. I'm going to play just the first like 4 minutes of the piece, just so you can kind of get a sense of how it goes, and we'll talk some more about it. Hold on just a second. Let me turn that up a little bit.
It was our first date. We had never met.
Hey,
did you hear that?
Me?
Yeah. We didn't know.
Sorry about that. I'm going to start it over so that this is loud enough. I'm sorry about this.
It was our first date. We had never met.
Me?
Yeah.
We'd emailed, but we hadn't even spoken.
Well, I should wait.
And I was waiting for her. Waiting, and waiting, and waiting.
Hello.
Hi, Dad, it's Erica calling.
Hey, Erica, how are you?
Hi, I'm so sorry, I'm running a little bit late.
Okay, that's okay. That's totally okay. I'm here. Is she okay?
Yes.
Good. Do you know how long you're going to be?
I think that I'm somewhere
in Washington. All right. Great. Do you want me to order you a drink so it's ready for when you get here?
Sure.
What do you want? My reception's really bad. I don't think I'm hearing right. Let me just go outside real quick. That is better. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
You know what, Erica? I think I see you. Do you see me? I'm right outside the bar. I'm waving. Hey!
Hi.
Hi. Are you alright?
Yeah, I am okay.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, I'm not sure what I said, but I'm sorry. What do you mean you were looking forward to this? What are you doing? You're walking the wrong way. Are you still there? Erica, are you joking? What is going on? Erica!
I mean, I was really confused and...
Hello, are you on the phone still?
I couldn't tell if she was still on or if she hung up, and I'm looking at my phone and I see that I had recently downloaded this app that records phone calls. And I looked at it and was like, I gotta listen to that recording.
Hi, Ben, it's Erica calling.
Started out the same exact way as I just recalled it. Then it starts to sound like not me. Jerk.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hi. Oh, hi, Erica. I think I see you. You see me? I'm right outside the bar.
I'm waving. Yes, I see you.
Hi.
I don't know who that was. That wasn't me. I'm not that person. She hung up because, God, what would I have said next? I wanted to like run after her and find her and apologize, but I was like, I should never say another word as long as I live.
So, a couple of things inspired that idea. One was just from my experience working in radio. You know, we interview a lot of people, done a lot of documentary work, and a lot of my work process would be recorded, and my interactions with people would be recorded. And it's happened to me when I've gone back and listened to the tape, and there would be like a really emotional interactions I had with people that I remembered a certain way, you know. And I go back and I listen to it, and it just seemed like the more emotional an interaction was, the less accurate my memory was of it. And I was actually talking to a neuroscientist about this one time at a public radio thing, and I ran this by him, and he's like, yes, that's true, that's what happens. And so that he responded positively, that made me think about it some more, made me think it was maybe something worth exploring. And then I've always had this idea of, I really like the idea of having the same lines. I like the idea of having a conversation, then hearing the conversation a second time, and hearing one performance say exactly the same, and the other performance say have the same words, but a completely different performance, so that the words, the meaning of the words changed. And I think that I thought that was a really radiophonic idea, because it's all about the performance. And so I had this idea for a story. This is basically what we just heard was sort of my pitch to This American Life for the story. And really the production of the story became kind of working out where to take that. And we ended up spending a really long time on it. One thing I want to talk about with this piece is sort of our process is we do a lot of improv, and so we'll collect a lot of material that we end up not using. And the idea is, like with that narration, in that Ed Herbstman is the actor in this piece, and that narration came from hours of interview tape. And when you hear it in the piece, it's maybe, if you totaled up all the narration time, it's maybe 2 minutes, maybe it's a minute and a half. It's not very much the piece. But we probably recorded narration for like 2 hours or more. I mean, it was incredible how much tape we got. And I'm just going to play a little excerpt of the piece we just heard. So you can...
Erica, are you joking? What is going on? Erica!
I mean, I was really confused and...
Hello, are you on the phone still?
I couldn't tell if she was still on or if she hung up, and I'm looking at my phone and I see that I had recently downloaded this app that records phone calls. And I looked at it and was like, I gotta listen to that recording.
Okay, so now I'm gonna play for you the piece of the recording session where a little bit of that narration came from, and you'll sort of see what I mean.
Really wanted to know, like, as soon as you saw that it was recorded, you're like, oh God, listen to this. I mean, this person just confused the hell out of me.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
This is like,
forget the delete thing.
Yeah, forget that. Just like, oh, this is, I'm so lucky. You know?
Yeah. Or I could say part of me wanted to delete it, but yeah, like, yeah. But I looked at the phone and I saw that I had recorded the call, and it was like, part of me wanted to delete it right there, just delete it. But then, I mean, most of me was like, I have got to listen to this. What the hell just happened? I mean, I was really confused and
there.
And I didn't know what I needed to find out. What the hell just occurred on this call? I can't believe I recorded. This is awesome. No, wait, I've got to listen.
See, most of this stuff isn't in the piece.
I looked at it and I was like...
So it's like, I recorded all this tape, and you know, I just took one little phrase, and it's like about recording all this tape and taking little phrases and posting them in and treating, instead of like writing out narration or spending a lot of, you know, spending time writing things, I spent a lot of time interviewing the actor and then write it with the tape so that it becomes... more about the writing with the sound, the ideal, the sort of platonic ideal that I'm sort of working towards is if I could somehow like write with sound, if I could think of a sound and put it here and think of a sound and put it there, then that would be the ideal. And so this is like the closest I can get is to generate material through improv and then, you know, cut it out and put it in places in the piece. So it gets a little closer to the way we put together documentaries, which is sort of where I was coming from. As a producer, I'd made a lot, you know, spent like 15 years working on documentaries. And I was used to writing by sifting through material and finding the story in the material. And so that's sort of where I feel more comfortable. And I was trying to apply that method to the way that we were making stories. So we ended up spending a year on this piece. There's a couple of reasons why we spent a year on it. A lot of them don't have much to do with what actually we spent time doing. Some of it was just like waiting for people to get back to me. But it was a very, very frustrating process. And at the end of it all, I just really wanted to do a piece really quickly. I wanted to find a way to do something like in a month. And so I was talking with this about this with Ed, and sort of decided on a few goals. And the idea was we would get together a group of improvisers and just meet and sort of workshop ideas, ways of combining improv with the recording studio. Like, what do we need in order to make a story? What do we really need? And how can we like leverage the strengths of this recording studio in combination with improv to make stories more that we like, you know, that sort of plays into what we think radio's strengths are and what we want to hear as radio drama, and also would be fast to write and a more efficient way of putting stories together. So it's a couple of things we decided. We're making a recording, not a script. This is really important. So a lot of radio drama, or a lot of really radio in general, is concerned with writing a script. And we don't see that as the end product. We see what we're doing as a recording. And so any way we get to the recording is cool. I mean, we want to find, sort of tap into what advantages that gives us as writers. The story is more important than any particular process. It doesn't necessarily matter how we do something. It's just about coming up with a good story and sort of finding a way to do that. Serve the story by breaking the barriers between the roles people play and the stages of the process, and make scripting, performing, and editing one sloppy mess. So we have this group of improvisers. We meet once a week, and the process will generally go like this. One person will have an idea. They'll bring it in. We'll kind of talk about it, talk about what we like about the idea, where we might want to take it. And then that person goes off, and the next week comes back with an outline. And we'll go through the outline, and we'll maybe we'll hear the outline and say, well, you know, the story doesn't really start until the end. So let's like start at the end and then make a new ending for it. And so we kind of go back and forth like that. It might take like a month, month and a half to actually make a story. And then what they're making is actually not a script, but an outline. It's like a set of instructions. So basically we're writing down everything we need to know at the recording session. And because these are really experienced improvisers, we know we don't really need to write down the dialogue. We just need to know sort of what the scene's doing. And then we'll do tons of improv around the outline. We'll maybe get 15 or 20 takes of every moment. We'll break it down into sections. And then I'll take all that tape and sift through it and find all just the little moments. In fact, I'm not even looking at the outline at this point. I'm just listening to the tape. And I'll pull all the moments of tape that I think are compelling and work as drama the way I would like to hear it. In other words, it has like a sort of authenticity to the performance. It sounds real. It sounds like the people are listening to one another. There's a way that the actors are expressing themselves that surprises me. And so I take all these moments out that came from the improv, and then I try to construct the story out of just those moments that I liked. Instead of like getting hung up on the script, getting hung up on the outline, what I get hung up on is the tape that I like, you know? So it's all driven by what I think was well performed and what is really the most interesting tape. And hopefully, if everyone's done their jobs right, and we recorded enough material, I have the material I need to make the story from that. And I don't have to go to the material that I think really didn't quite measure up. We break the stories with the performers. This is important. So because the performers are writing the story with us at an early stage, they are invested in the writing process. When it comes time to record, they don't hesitate about adding things or giving ideas or like trying things a different way or suggesting even a different story outcome, because they were involved with the whole writing process to begin with. A lot of times when I work with actors who weren't a part of the writing process, they get really hesitant about adding things. They want to know what you want from them. And really what I want from them is to give me ideas, you know, and to add something and contribute to the story. And so I like to work, that's why I like to bring the performers in as early as possible in the writing process. It makes them feel more invested in the outcome and makes them feel more free to contribute ideas. And then another, the kill ideas, character lines, and even major story points if they don't serve a story, no matter who came up with them. So there's no egos involved in this. The thing that matters is the story, ultimately. It doesn't matter who came up with something, doesn't matter who wants what. If it makes the story better, that's what's important. And then nothing is ever locked until it's posted on iTunes. So the story gets rewritten at every stage of production. It's constantly being rewritten at the editing stage. If there's something we had planned in the story that when we hear it in Pro Tools, you know, if we can cut it out and it sounds better, we totally do that. And with that This American Life piece, we were rewriting it constantly throughout that entire process. And one of the key pieces of tape that I found in that story that I really love, that I think encapsulates a lot of the themes in that piece and that the scene that it's in, I found like at 2:30 in the morning the night before it was due, because I was trying to make the scene work so badly. You know, I just felt like I needed to make this piece work. So much was riding on it for me. And it wasn't until that I found this one little piece of tape that was buried in this improv session we'd done like 9 months earlier, you know. And so it's like I'm always open to making the story, always constantly trying to make the story better and open to whatever solution happens to present itself. So the first story we did with this group of improvisers and using this method was called Interruptible. And the idea is it takes place all in a taxi cab, and we recorded it on location in a car driving around Manhattan. And so before we recorded it, we developed the story through improv. We had an outline, and we sort of cast it and just in a writing session, and decided, okay, we're just going to try it out. Just let's improvise around this outline and see what happens. And we learned some really interesting things from doing that. We learned that the story wasn't really about what we thought it was going to be about. We learned that the casting needed to be a certain way for the story to work, because we tried different people in different roles. We learned that, in this story, there's a taxi driver, there's a couple that gets in a cab, and there's a therapist who's drunk, who gets in the cab. And so we had this couple who was fighting the whole time, and they were kind of shrill. We didn't really like them very much. And then we had this drunk therapist who was like drunk and sloppy, and we didn't really like her very much, you know? She was just like this intrusion. And then we had this taxi driver who wasn't really talking very much. And so we thought, well, how do we make this work? And I thought, well, what if the story is really about the taxi driver and that he's overhearing these three people interacting, and that these three people interacting affects the taxi driver? That's the story. That's the arc. And so that's what we decided. We decided, oh, let's start on the taxi driver, hear his perspective at first, and then sort of back away from that story and just hear things as he would be hearing them. So that's something that we wouldn't have learned had we, you know, gone straight to the recording session. We tried it out through improv, and we learned that about it. So, Interruptible. So we recorded this on location. We recorded it in a car. And like I was saying before, I love to record things on location because the location informs the improv. It gives the actor something to play with, and it makes them act in ways that they wouldn't act in a studio. Like when you're driving a car, you know, you use your voice a certain way, you turn your head, and the fact that he's turning his head makes his head face away from the microphone. You can totally hear that. You can hear how the sound bounces off the windows and the upholstery, and you can hear the crinkling in the seat a certain way. You can hear the turn signals. Like, things that I wouldn't think to put into the piece just happen naturally in this environment. And the way, you know, the way people move in the car and all that. And one big thing that came out of this was, so we were thinking through the outline of the story and thinking about what we could do with location recording in a car. And I was thinking, well, wouldn't it be kind of cool to go to a drive-through restaurant? And so I looked up, we were in Manhattan, and I was like, well, are there even drive-through restaurants in New York? I looked it up online, and it turns out there's one drive-through restaurant. in Manhattan, and it's a McDonald's on 34th and the West Side Highway, right off the West Side Highway. And so I thought, okay, 34th, that's kind of centrally located. What if we start downtown and end up near Columbia or something, what was that called? Riverside Park. And that could be our halfway point. And halfway through the journey, they'll stop and go to McDonald's. And we should get good tape there because, you know, there's all this stuff. And so I'm going to play you that section. And the other cool thing about going to McDonald's was it gave them the actors food to eat. And so that affected their speech. You can hear them chewing, you know. People talk differently when they're eating. It's interesting. This crinkling of the bag, there's a real kind of physicality to the world that they're inhabiting. And so let's hear that scene.
Hi, yes.
Please.
Could I get a cheeseburger value meal with a Coke and a coffee?
Yes,
a number two. And could I also get a cup of coffee
with
milk and sugar? I know, honey.
You don't need
to. Oh, sorry, cream. Cream and sugar? Just one cream and one sugar?
One
cream
and one sugar?
Yes.
Mm.
A small French fry.
And one french fry?
Yes. And do you have barbecue sauce?
Yeah.
One barbecue sauce. That's all.
That's it.
That's it?
Yes.
9:37.
Great. Thank you very much.
Very
good. May I say, Yushila, I finished talking. And first you must say, I interrupted you. I'm sorry. Please go on. See how that works for you. I'm just saying, I think you're both very attractive, very attractive.
Thank you.
But you both have terrible listening skills.
Beg your pardon?
No, we heard you. That's how good our listening skills are. We heard you say that we have terrible listening skills.
My wife and I have heard that knowing what's going on in the other person.
Yes, I know. Right now he's upset.
I'm a little upset.
Hungry.
I am not upset.
This night didn't go the way you wanted it to go.
No, that is not true.
I think it's true.
I had no expectations about this night.
Okay.
But
yes,
how does it feel when you're interrupted constantly?
Yay! Exactly. Here, so we get the coffee? Your fries? That's the burger. Perfect.
Another thing that in there, she feels like she's going to throw up. That actually came from her actually feeling nauseous. So she's like interacting with the world and in letting that inform the performance. And
how did you have a mic?
Okay, so that's a good question. So this is, I recorded to this. This is a Zoom 16-track mixer. It has actually 8 XLR inputs. And they're putting on wireless mics exactly like the one I'm wearing right now, actually. It's a Sony wireless lav mic. So all 4 of them have those. And then I have this is a stereo mic with a windscreen on it. It's a Shure VP88. And so I sat in this seat and I held the mic like this. And I just kind of got the ambience of the car. And they all have lav mics. And so, you know, in Pro Tools I had 6 tracks of audio and I could mix it however I wanted that way. I could pan them to certain locations and if they were talking too soft for the stereo mic, I could bring them up. You know, I could if I just wanted the car door slamming, I could cut all the mics, call all the lav mics. So I do that a lot, actually. That's how I've been recording things a lot lately, is giving everyone lav mics and recording the room ambiance with the stereo mic, because it gives you so much control over the stereo imaging and the amount of ambiance and the relative levels of the speakers. It's sort of like the stereo mic is like the camera, and the lav mics are like lav mics in a video shoot. It gives you a lot of control.
Yeah. So,
right. So this piece was inspired by some. I think it was Melanie, who's actually not in the piece, but she had this experience of, like, I think a friend of hers was helping a drunk woman, and she got in the cab, and then they took her home, and it ended up her home was right where they started, and so we thought that. We started thinking about that situation and how we might be able to turn it into a story. And in this particular story, I mean, it's different for every story. Like, you know, what we start with, what are the themes we're trying to explore. This one, we kind of found it through doing it. Like, that title, Interruptible, was something I came up with after we recorded it. And it became kind of a theme while I was editing it. I noticed that there's a lot of interrupting going on. I mean, she talks about interrupt. Actually, what it was is we had this. At the end of the piece, there's it ends with a radio promo. It turns out the drunk therapist has a radio show, a talk radio show, and she's constantly solving people's problems. And so that's what she's doing in the car the whole time. And we don't really realize that until the end of the piece. And she says, there's one thing she says in the, this was like one of those off-the-cuff moments. We had her saying lots of different things, but we were making this fake radio promo. And we had her saying these crazy things that a therapist might say, and she said, if you're being interrupted, it's because you're interruptible. And I thought it was a really funny thing to say, because it seems like such nonsense, you know, in a way, but it's, I don't know, I guess there's some truth to it, but. And so I like that word interruptible, and we had that in the piece, and I noticed there's all this interrupting going on, and it became kind of a theme when I was editing it. I started thinking of ways of interrupting things, and like the radio interrupts the taxi driver, the radio interrupts the couple, or you know, the McDonald's drive-through window interrupts the therapist. You know, it just became kind of a thematic device for the piece. Okay, so the next piece we did, this was Chet Siegel's idea. She went to spin class, and so she wanted to do a piece that was about sort of the interior life of a woman in spin class. Because when she went, she felt like she went through a process over the course of a class. And we spent a lot of time talking about the story, and we made recordings of her class. Secretly, she, on her iPhone, she just put it at the bottom of her bike, and so we got sort of dialogue ideas for the instructor that way, and musical ideas. I actually got the music from this piece by holding that recording up to my iPhone and doing, is it Spotify? Is that the, you know, that's how I figured out what the music was in this piece. This is a really good example of how we use improv in the stories we develop. I'm going to show you. So we had a story outline for the inner monologues, and they were in an outline, but it wasn't working during the recording session. There were sort of these themes that were set up early in the story. You had one character who was upset because the other character was on her bike when she gets to class. And in these spin classes, you sign up for a bike, and it's like a poor form, bad form to take someone else's bike, and so. She gets to class and someone else is on her bike, and she really likes that bike, and so she asks her to get off. There's sort of this passive-aggressive interaction about that, and we decided, well, her character really likes rules a lot. And then the other character is a baker, and so the first character compliments her on her cupcakes. She's tried her cupcakes, and the second character responds as though she's just trying to make nice because she just took her bike anyway. There's this kind of charged interaction at the beginning, and I wanted that to inform the whole piece. I wanted to take it someplace. And in the outline we developed, that wasn't really developed. At the climax of the piece, it was going someplace completely different with it. Here's the outline, just for that section. This is about 5 minutes into the piece. You'll see in the outline it says, Lisa tries to coach herself in her head and a shift happens. She lives inside a cake and all of her friends are talking confections. A cupcake delivers her a statement from the bank saying that her banker tried her peanut shortbread jam sandwich cookies and decided she never has to repay the loan she took to open her bakery. This doesn't really have anything to do with that open. It just was sort of a funny idea that Chet came up with. And then Sam's fantasies, going down here, are in a hospital. She's a nurse. And Lisa's on the surgeon's table. Sam sews cake and pastries into all of Lisa's wounds and mouth. We hear Lisa trying to blurt out muffled yelps. And so I wanted it to be kind of more reflective of their inner lives and what we'd established for these characters early on. And so I had the, since we were doing a lot of improv around their inner monologues in this piece, the piece is, we hear the inner thoughts of these characters over this music that, as they're exercising. And so what I did is I had this music, I brought it to the recording session, I played it into their headphones, and had them just try improvising, you know. And we talked about this before they did it, and they tried some improv. And somehow the combination of like hearing the music and thinking in terms of that initial interaction led to some really amazing improv. And we did lots of different ways. We tried lots of different things, but I'm going to play you how the way that it actually ended up in the piece, so you can see sort of how it changed through performance.
Eyes forward, elbows tight, butt down, keep it tight. How old am I?
I don't know.
How old am I?
Don't
look.
35.
I'm 55. I'm 55.
I'm 55! I'm never gonna die!
I feel so gross. Sweating all over. Pico. My stomach is sweating. I think my nose is sweating. Starting to feel floaty. Look at her.
Ruby, it's so hard.
She's gonna slow down any minute. It's gonna be over soon. No more Lisa. Just me and Kirk presiding over a perfect orchard of perfect bodies.
I choose you, Sam, to be my queen as we preside over an orchard of beautiful bodies.
Yeah. Perfect bodies.
You will make the selections.
This tape from Ed, by the way, was something that we'd done a week earlier from this recording session, and it was just something he had improvised off the cuff. It wasn't actually meant to be in the piece. He was just goofing around, and when I was going through the tape in between that recording and this recording session, I picked that tape. I loved that tape, and I gave it to Chet. I told Chet about it at the second recording session, and we tried to incorporate it somehow. So it was like this thing that wasn't even meant to be in the piece. We found a way to incorporate it.
Can I be a part of your orchard?
No. Kirk and I don't approve your membership to the Orchard of Perfect Bodies.
Please, let me be in your cool orchard.
If you had just followed orders, you could have been a part of the Orchard of Perfect Bodies.
Come on, it's not too late. Don't let it be too late. I just want to be with you guys.
You've proven to me that you can't follow simple rules, and there are many complex rules in this orchard.
I'll follow the rules, I swear. I'll do whatever. Just please let me be with you and Kirk. Please, I'm so
It sucks being alone, doesn't it?
Yes, it's awful!
It sucks sitting at home and just watching Netflix every night alone with your cat, doesn't
please,
it?
Please.
Yeah, it's really awful.
Please.
I want to hear you, everybody, scream!
I'm hooked on your cupcakes, Lisa. I just need another one. Anyone you've got, if you got like vanilla, if you've got like a red velvet.
Let me see what I have.
You can steal one. I'm just letting you steal.
I've got one left.
Really?
And it's all yours.
Seriously?
Yeah, go ahead. Eat it.
Mm, so good. So good. So sweet. What's in it?
That would be concentrated eggs and razor blades.
What?
Yeah,
It's a new recipe. It's called murder. You just got murdered.
Ow! Ow! The razor blades!
The razor blades are kicking in?
Yeah, they're starting to cut me.
Yeah, this is sad for everyone.
I feel all my insides are bleeding.
They are. They feel that because they are.
I wish I had a band-aid for my inside.
Oh. I need to sit in this box. I'll close the lid and I'll take you to the cemetery and bury you because you're dying.
So you can hear it's a lot different than the piece, than the outline. And we did a lot of different things, you know. It got edited a lot after the fact. And it was really about generating lots of material that would then get sifted through in the edit. And both actresses contributed ideas. All the actors contributed ideas. And it got sifted through. Let's see where we're at now. Any questions about this? Okay. Okay, questions? Yeah?
I'm curious to know how many times, like how many edits do you go through? Like how much time do you spend editing?
Do you mean the audio or the...
Yeah, like I mean once you have, so like what's your, so you have the script and then you do the recordings and then you cut something together and then you're like, okay, I don't know if this is working, and then you re-record, like how many times do you go back and change things?
No, we have a deadline for the podcast. So the podcast is released every 2 weeks. We have a deal with PodTrack, which is like they give sort of sponsorship deals to podcasts, and so we'll lose our PodTrack deal if we don't put a new episode up every 2 weeks, and so that's the incentive, and so usually there's a tight deadline. And we'll record, like one of the recent pieces I did, third party, it's like a 23-minute long piece. And we spent maybe a month and 2 months developing. Actually, that one had a script. It was unusual. And then I edited it together and did all the sound design and wrote all the music in a week. You know, so that was a pretty quick turnaround for such a long piece. There's a lot of... I don't do a lot of re-recording after we record the first time. I originally, when we first started, I did a great deal of re-recording, but now it's just kind of become, I guess I've gotten more, so that I understand more what we'll need, and also it's just the nature of the production cycle we're on. I try to get everything we need in that one recording session, and then it becomes a matter of editing it. And usually the editing, because these are short stories, they're usually around 15 minutes long. The editing of the story will take 2 days, and then the sound design will take much longer than that, like 3 to 4 days. But the thing is, I'll be revising the editing as I'm going. I don't know, I've developed like these systems for doing it so that I can sift through different takes fairly quickly and get to an edit of the scene I like. I kind of just have, through sort of evolution and doing it over and over again, I've kind of developed this way of working that leads to the final product relatively quickly. So, but I mean, the idea though is that I would love the luxury of going back and recording stuff again if it didn't work. I would love there to be a lot of feedback involved in the process. It's just lately we haven't seemed to need it that much. So, sure.
Do you use the same group?
First question, we have an ensemble of actors, but we don't always use the same actors. The actors, all the writing generally comes from this group, but it depends on the story who we cast. So if it's a story that no one in the group necessarily would be good for, then we form ad hoc groups of actors to perform the story. Like we did a story recently called That's Democracy, that took place in a high school classroom. There's a teacher and students. And so we wanted all different voices for that piece. It was developed, it was written by Lewis Kornfeld, who's a member of our group. He was the husband in the taxi cab piece. But he wasn't in the piece at all. And we had an improviser named Peter McNerney come in and play the teacher because he'd had experience as a substitute teacher, and he runs a story collective called Story Pirates that takes students' stories and turns them into performances. And so he'd had a lot of experience working with students, and he just sounded like a high school teacher to me. And so, and then we sort of, I had auditions for the student parts. I was looking for improvisers that sounded really young. And so it's like a combination of both. And as far as how we pay people, I don't get paid for this, and the actors don't get paid. Although we're starting to get a little bit of money. And so, you know, as we do that, we'll probably, you know, we'll spread it out. But right now it's like a labor of love for us. We started off, we wanted this to be a project that would be funded. We did a pilot for American Public Media. We got a little bit of money to do a pilot for American Public Media that resulted in a piece called Moon Graffiti that was an alternate history of the first moon landing. They sat on it for 6 months and didn't do anything with it, and then said, And Peter Clowney, who has been our sort of editorial advisor, is like, well, why don't you, here's what you should do. You should try to do a piece for This American Life, because that'll get their attention, you know. And so I did a piece for This American Life. It got everyone's attention but them. And at that point, I was just like, I just want to do this. I mean, they're not going to believe that this can be as good as I think it can be until I show them that it can. And I think this is that's just the nature of this project, is that it's highly dependent on the way it's executed. And it's the nature of really any creative, highly creative project. It's not like we can apply for a science grant, you know, and get a grant to do a science show. We can't do that. Maybe there's theater grants we can get. But so far, we've been in the position of having to prove ourselves and prove that people actually want to hear this. Public radio has an aversion to radio drama. The impression I'm under is that they tried it in the 80s and they didn't think it was very successful for them. And so they're very reluctant to take it on because they don't think their listeners want to hear it. They haven't really liked much of the radio drama they've heard. And so I've always felt like there was a lot of potential in drama on the radio. I felt like it's an untapped world for stories. What radio's great at is storytelling, and why shouldn't fiction storytelling have a place on the radio? And so I really believe in that idea, and I feel like the reason maybe it hasn't been so successful in the past has to do with how it's been executed. I don't know that for sure, but it's just my theory, my idea, and that I felt like if I could apply things I've learned about radio storytelling through working on shows like Radiolab and Studio 360 and all kinds of public radio shows, that maybe I could find a way of doing radio drama that would work for them. And so that's the position I'm in right now, is that I have this podcast, and we've been producing stories we have a new podcast every 2 weeks. We've produced like 10 to 12 stories over the past year, and they've been generally very well received. And we just got invited to Australia for a conference, and we have 30,000 regular listeners of our podcast. It's been downloaded 700,000 times the past 6 months, and so it's hopefully we can find a way to get the money that we need to actually do it for real with paid performers, paid writers, and paid producers. So it's like a build it and they will come approach. So, yes?
In the Everybody Scream one, you said that the inner monologue wasn't working when you're just having them do it by themselves, but when they put music on, they work better. Like,
yeah.
Did they put music on loudly and do it like, and then you like edit it later, or did they put it on quietly just so they could hear it and they could play off each other?
It was going off on their headphones, and they could hear each other through their headphones too.
They didn't like edit it together later, like they were all talking to each other.
I did edit it later. Yeah, but I had them on separate tracks for the music, so like, I had everyone separate, and I could edit it however I wanted. Yeah.
My question is about the new goals. This this idea of killing ideas, killing characters and lines that, don't serve the story. Where do you see that process lying? Do you see it lying in the editing or during the outline process?
I see it the entire process. So it's sort of like just because like the person who came up with the idea thinks it should go a certain way, if everyone else disagrees with them, then we question that. We don't get hung up on anything because of who came up with it. We just try to make a good story. The point of that is just that the story is the most important thing, you know. So the question is, like, how much planning do we have before we go into the improv session? Is that basically it?
If you have, like, a checklist of different tactics for situating a statement.
Usually, we know the story has to communicate a certain point. And it's about finding different ways of expressing that through performance. And so they'll try lots of different ways. And I like it when actors give me something different on every take because it gives me more options for the editing. And so really, I mean, that kind of thing gets sifted through at the editing stage. And when we're recording, I'm just listening to make sure that I've got the options I feel like I'll need in order to make it work. So, look, when we come up with an outline, there's aspects of the outline that are clearly up for grabs and can be expressed any number of ways. There's elements of it that are clearly need to be done a certain way in order for the story to work. So we know where we're going with it. We know like where this section of this scene needs to end. We know, you know, what we want in terms of character development and who we want this character to be. And so we're sort of playing off of what we've decided already in the story. And it's really what we're making up is just the words that they use to say it, and the level of the kind of interaction that they have that expresses that idea. Is that, you know?
I'm just wondering about when you turn the recorder on, you're in that space, like, you know, I was thinking of the taxi cab one in particular. And you have this outline and you're all kind of on the same page, but are there moments when you're recording where someone sort of goes in a direction that either you don't want or you see or hear something that you actually would like them to follow further that they don't? Do you interrupt, or how engaged are you?
Yeah, I definitely, we shape it as we're recording. So if I hear something I want them to develop more or tone back on or you know, develop more, I'll give that feedback to them. Oftentimes, my general philosophy is I like to let them finish the take before I give them that feedback, because I'm always looking for like these happy accidents. And I kind of want to know what they're going to do next. I always feel like I want to know what they're going to do next. And I just kind of, as the take is going, I just keep a mental tally of everything that I know I want to make a note of or try again or try differently or develop in a certain way. So, but yeah, there's definitely an interaction going on. Yeah. Did you have a question or no? I thought someone was raising their hand back there, but no.
Have you ever been in a situation where you've gotten, you know, part, I'm trying to piece this together, part A of a particular flow of ideas and part C, and then pulled someone back for a follow-up to get part B? Or do you just, it's gone if you don't have part B?
if I need it, I'll do it. I'll record it again, for sure. Yeah. That was something like, I was working at Radiolab for a little bit, and that was something that they did a lot. And something, actually, I did this piece about Pixar one time for Studio 360, and one thing they talked about in terms of their story process was that it's very iterative, meaning that they'll do something, and sort of the group will listen to it or look at it, and they'll react to it, and they'll go back and change individual elements in it. And that's something I try to employ a lot. But that's the way that a lot of narration is done in Radiolab. They'll record one version of it, and then they'll go back and just record little phrases that get stuck in there. So, yeah. Any other questions? It's 3:30.
So the BBC, like, they have, I mean, people love drama in the BBC, and just think of, like, the Archers that's been on the air for, like, whatever, I don't know, 50 years or something ridiculous like that. And so I wonder if you talked a little bit about how public radio is generally kind of resistant to doing it, but I wonder if there's sort of anything to learn from the BBC, or besides the fact that they have $1 million, $2 million, but
right.
Like how it works so well there.
It's definitely a cultural thing combined with like the way that it's funded. I'm doing a piece for the BBC right now.
Oh, cool.
For Radio 4. And we're looking and trying to make things happen for next year. But yeah, it's a different kind of culture there too. They have a different set of expectations, I think, for how they want their drama to sound. And it sort of remains to be seen whether or not I would, you know, the kinds of stuff I want to do would actually even have a place there.
You know. About your sensibility.
I like to do stuff that's more improv based. They're very scripted. They like a certain kind of performance style. They like a certain kind of, you know, sense of scenes and pacing and that kind of thing. It's very traditional. It's very, I don't know. I mean, they do a lot of really creative stuff too. So it's not like that's very really well executed, really well acted. It's just a little bit less loose than what I like to hear. We record wherever the story calls for. So, like, recorded in a car. We recorded at the Magnet Training Center. Actually, is a really cool place to record because they've got a lot of different rooms that have completely different sonic characteristics. So, like, a back room is kind of like this. It's like a big room that's carpeted, but then there's a room in the middle that's very small. It's about the size of a bedroom. Then there's a room in the front that it's like very reverberant, but it's like a woody reverberance. Then there's a room in the hallway that's very reverberant, but it has a very cement kind of hard, like not wood, but tile floor kind of reverberance. And then there's also a very narrow, like it's basically like a fire escape, but it's not. It's like a very narrow hallway that's made of brick. So we did this story that takes place in a subway, and we use that as the subway. It's very long and narrow and gave a certain sense of space to the way the voice is bounced off of it. So that's a really versatile place that we record. We record in like my apartment. We record outside. If it takes place outside, I want to record outside. So, yeah.
You talked a little bit earlier about the equipment that you use. Do you have any advice for somebody who wanted to experiment with your on-location method, but is on a bit more of a budget than that?
I would try working with a stereo mic.
Okay.
And like a lot of times if I, because the lav mics can get so cumbersome, I'll just do stuff with a stereo mic. And I just make sure I'm, you know, I'd be really conscious about the imaging, you know, like where the actors are in relation to the center of the two mics. And that's my advice. I mean, that comes from like when I was doing documentaries, I wanted it to sound like the way that location tape sounded when I was getting documentary tape. And so that's sort of where that comes from. It's just, I just approached it like I was making a documentary, only it was they were acting. I didn't do anything differently than I would have for that. So you don't have to have expensive equipment. It just sort of depends on the aesthetic you're going for and just, you know, making choices that reinforce that, you know? So. Any other questions? I think. Okay. All right, we're done. All right, thanks a lot.